extra content today. Welcome to the podcast only version of the Morning Reboot. It's Eric Chase, and still here from her her debut on the show, Dr. Andrea Mata. Thanks for hanging out.
No problem.
We'll get the kids to gymnastics.
Yes.
On time. I guess it was in the fall. I said, I'm reading this book. I think you're really going to like it. And then you went and picked this thing up.
Yes.
Correct? Can you give me the title? Because we just referred to it as coddling. And I brought my iPad in today where I have the book. And I just wanted to throw some of the quotes at you. And we can kind of toss these back and forth.
The title is The Coddling of the American Mind. And then there's like a subtitle. I can find it. How Good Intentions and Bad Ideas Are Setting Up a Generation for Failure.
So peanut allergies, why you cause them, and your helicopter parenting, and most of this book, it's from two very profound psychologists.
One's a psychologist, one's an economist.
With a background in all the mental health stuff. So right. It's right in your background and what I have great advocacy for. And the setting for most of their expertise, where they're talking about, is mostly college. Colleges and university, which is where you happen to work.
I do.
Which makes this book probably even more intriguing for you. Can I have your Twitter version summary of it, and then your big takeaways from it?
Yeah. So I think for the most part, the book talks about from 2013 to 2017 on college campuses, we were seeing a lot of a pretty significant shift in college students. We were seeing significantly higher levels of depression and anxiety, and a lot of polarization of emotions and feelings and thoughts, and a lot of kind of backlash, and the reduction of free speech. And so they try to explain, the two authors try to explain why we saw this phenomenon for about 4 years. And what we can do about it.
And they talked about it like it's a culture of safetyism. Mm-hmm. And the kids didn't come to the campus like this.
Right.
Campuses.
So, well, they came from, you know, the helicopter parents, so that kind of started them up. And then when they got to campuses, campuses were trying to protect them from, you know, any kind of speech that could possibly offend.
Trigger words,
safe zones, or safety places where they could go and, like, listen to quiet music or relaxing music or color or something along those lines because they were triggered.
We can roll out the common denominator. We can throw this out there and move on from it. Oh, crap. I have to take this. Hold on. Sorry.
Nope.
Hello. Now we're back rolling. Apologies. It was a confirmation message.
Gotcha.
I was waiting to get. Anyway, we can throw this out there and move on. Yes, Facebook and social media is to some blame, but there's a route that's before that allowed Facebook to be a bigger, badder monster on these campuses. How did you feel about the book? Were you like me and nodding? I know we texted a lot as we were taking parts of it.
Right. I mean, I got it. I enjoyed it. A lot of it was like, oh my, like some of the parts that I did when they gave like incidences that happened on different college campuses, not at the University of Findlay. I had heard some of those instances, but not all of them, where professors, you know, were essentially forced to resign because they were, you know, they had sent an email that was just like, I can't remember the one.
There was an adjective, but you used the word mold.
Yeah.
And some student lost their mind and felt excluded and that they were marginalized. And then, you know how the Twitter outrage happens. And before you know it, they had to retire.
Right. And the one that I was thinking about was the one where it was like Halloween costumes, and like the female professor like sent out an email like encouraging her students to like think about the costumes that they were wearing, and like students lost their minds.
Yeah. It's funny, in a place where you should have a remedial level of critical thought based on your upbringing, middle school, high school, and where you're challenged to think critically, as you talked about, this safetyism and the avoidance of, I hate the word, trigger words.
Right.
We made that a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Trigger warnings.
Mm-hmm. In a place where you're supposed to be challenged to think as an adult, and where you grow into that mind that you will hopefully one day have, we backed away from that. That's all this book talked about.
Absolutely. And I think that was one of the things that I really appreciated about the course I taught in the fall called The Dating in the 21st Century. On the very first day, I tell, you know, the 16 students that were in the class, I was like, look, like if you are a highly, and I don't know if you, I can't remember if you like this word or don't like this word, like sensitive. Like if you are a highly sensitive, if you're easily offended person, like this is not the course for you to take.
And nobody actually thinks they're easily offended.
Correct. And so I told them, I was like, hey, like if like you could, everyone can say whatever it is that they want to say in this class. And if you feel yourself becoming offended, don't just say like, hey, I'm offended. Like you need to sit back and you need to think about like, what is it about what that person is saying that is, you know, that's raising these emotions, and then start asking them questions. And when I got the teaching evaluations in December, that was probably the number one most stated comment was like that the students appreciated that they had a space, for lack of a better word, they had a place that they could come and they could just openly share their thoughts and not fear being criticized or, you know, said that, oh, you've triggered me, because it wasn't an acceptable answer.
Let me start, and I mentioned it at the outset of this, let me start at the beginning and then we'll work into some of these other highlights, and I'll let you go. Okay. Peanut allergies were rare among American children up until the mid-90s, when one study found that only four out of 1,000 kids under the age of 8 had an allergy. But by 2008, according to the same survey, using the same measures, the rate had more than tripled to 14 out of 1,000. Nobody knew why, but I guess, and fill in my blanks here, one person had a peanut allergy. It caught like wildfire on the internet that there's peanut allergens. We stopped parents whose kids didn't have allergies, stopped giving those things to them, and they never built up an immunity to it.
Right.
So it tripled.
And now I know, like, I don't quote me, but like, I know pediatricians, I think, are now recommending like people give their infants peanut or peanut butter earlier, so that we don't have the high number of, not high number, because there's not a really high number of peanut allergies, but like, so to kind of ward off peanut allergies.
But you being a new mom and someone with a background in psychology, can you talk about the fallacy of this and how the hell we got here, and be as critical as you like, because this is emblematic of the larger issue of, we're going to protect you and not prepare you, which is all wrong.
Right. Absolutely. So I think for the most part, people, you know, they might catch wind, like parents might catch wind. And the thing about parents is that they want what's absolutely best for their children. They want their children to succeed. And so they might catch wind of something that might be negative or something that might be really good for them. And then if they hear that it's negative, they're going to, you know, try to essentially put their children in a bubble, which is not good. Or if they find out something's really good for them, then they're going to try to, you know, in the mindset of more is better, put their kids and so many more. So a great example of this is like extracurricular activities. Like we know that extracurricular activities are really good for kids. They give a lot of, you know, promote a bunch of different developmental positive outcomes. However, if you put your kids in too many extracurricular activities, right, well, then you're starting to look at the overscheduled hypothesis.
It's unfair for you in a way because you have a background with this. I it's challenging for parents who don't, where there is no right or wrong answer. Their kid doesn't come with a guide, and you need to be able to tell the difference intuitively, because you know, no one knows your kid like you, that my kid fell down. He needs to get back. He's crying. He or she is crying his eyes out, but he's going to be okay. He needs to fight through this, as opposed to something's up, let me take him to the doctor.
Mm-hmm. Embrace the struggle.
Yeah.
Like sometimes, like you don't need to, you know, take them to the doctor. Like they'll recover. They'll be okay. So you just need to kind of use your intuition, and then just reach out to an expert.
One thing that I've started to focus on is intent, and it's a frivolous attempt to have these discussions fairly anywhere on the internet or on Twitter. Let me give you this highlighted portion of the book. Again, The Coddling of the American Mind. In moral judgment, as it's long been studied by psychologists, intent is essential for assessing guilt. That's why we have murder and manslaughter. We generally hold people morally responsible for acts they intended to commit. There's a jump ahead in here where I guess some people who we referred to, some of these students who are in these safe areas now, don't care about the intent. And I know growing up that, like, I learned the line, ignorance is no intent of ignorance is no defense for not knowing the law or whatever it is. If you're speeding and you're doing 65 and you didn't know it was a 45, you can't say, I didn't know. But we do get caught in a lot of these because the internet is a great intersection of people of diverse backgrounds. For instance, I might have brought it up to you. There was a guy who was a football writer in Philadelphia. He made an unfortunate drawing that looked like a black face with big red lips and everything. And the internet went after him. I was unfamiliar with like that portion of blackface, and there's a name for it. I forget what it's called. And he went viral. He had no intent. He's not a racist. He's a good dude. He just didn't know. But people don't assess it that way. It's very binary now.
We don't give people benefit of the doubt. We always automatically think that they have like the worst intent possible out to get us.
There's a line in here that speaks to just for that. Hold on, let me see if I can pull it up. Hold on. Sorry for the delay. Sorry, I'll come back to that. Give me another thought from the book if you have one.
So I think the big thing is kind of like people trusting what I joke with my undergrad research assistants, like trusting their feels. So it's the untruth of emotional reasoning. So always believing whatever you're feeling is the truth.
And I think that's in here as well.
Right. And so I think that's kind of always trusting your feelings is kind of the subtitle for that chapter. But people... They don't focus in on what their thoughts are. They're focusing more on what their feelings are, and when we need to kind of find a balance between feelings.
Something I've come across a lot in, you know, as I've studied myself with bipolar is feelings are signals and often not realities. You can probably find that quote a million different times in CBT books, right?
Right. Absolutely. So that just because you're feeling that way doesn't necessarily mean that that's how it is. And you really do need to explore the thoughts that are associated with those feelings.
I can't find that one great quote from here. Let me pick another one out just randomly. Jones then delivered some of the best advice for college students that we've ever heard. He rejected the untruth of fragility and turned safetyism on its head. I don't want you to be safe ideologically. I don't want you to be safe emotionally. I want you to be strong. That's different. I'm not going to pave the jungle for you. Put on some boots and learn how to deal with adversity. I'm not going to take all the... this is the quote. This is the home run. I'm not going to take all the weights out of the gym. That's the whole point of the gym. This is the gym. That's what college is.
Yes.
If you probably crossed the line at like Nazis and any other kind of like out and out hatred and bigotry.
Right.
But your mind is supposed to be challenged there.
Absolutely. And that's the point. That's the one part. That's the 4 years that you can kind of develop. It's the location. It's the place where you should be kind of challenged mentally to explore your thoughts, your beliefs, and your interactions with others.
We mentioned social media briefly at the beginning of this. So it's not a bad thing. Just like people might be surprised. Like guns aren't bad. People are bad. People have always been the problem.
Correct.
Facebook isn't the problem. It just creates a very easy avenue for certain things.
Right.
And it exacerbates this because it's challenging as it is to be a teenager. It's harder than ever to be an adult or a young adult to get the job you want, the grades you want. It's competitive. And this book talks about that.
Right.
What's a good way to be able to be social media active, but not fall to the avalanche of it?
I think kind of limiting the amount of time that you're on it. So not spending all day, every day on it, but maybe giving yourself, social media breaks. So like giving yourself time limits. So 20, 30 minutes a day where you allow yourself to scroll through social media. And then you want to keep in mind, your personal branding. I know my colleague, Dr. Scott Grant, would applaud me for saying stuff like that along these lines because he talks about this all the time. But personal branding, it's like... social media is part of your personal brand. And now that we're seeing so many people losing their jobs losing their jobs or having negative consequences, you know, associated with things that they posted on social media years ago.
Mm-hmm. I'll give you a word.
Uh-huh.
Weaponizing.
Yes. And so it's be careful, be cognizant, be conscious of what you are posting on your social media. And maybe just don't put the negativity out there. If you see someone post and you really want to, you know, you have a reaction to it, don't, maybe just that first reaction is not what you should post. Maybe you need to take a step back, take a few minutes, and then think about whether or not you really want to post that.
And that's what we know, as opposed to, look, times change. You could say certain jokes and they'd be societally mm-hmm. acceptable 25 years
yes.
ago. We can't predict. I mean, look, I we're good people. Mm-hmm. I think we have good values, but
right.
things that we might say offhand, not with no intent of hurt, could change in 20 years. And somebody comes back and they're like, "You can't work. You lose all your tenure at the University of Finley, and Eric, you're never allowed on the radio ever again."
Exactly.
And we can't even predict that stuff. That's why it's important to be careful. I've mm-hmm. read something, I don't know, in the last day or so about you should treat your social media interactions like you would treat your credit report.
Okay.
And maybe that's how I think, because they wanted to correlate. Maybe you should get credit based on your social media behavior.
Right.
I was like, that makes sense. Like, if you're calling people all kinds of rude words on the internet and stuff, you know, I don't know if I want to give you a loan.
Absolutely.
Here's something else. Some other highlights I wanted to throw at you. That is the epitome of safetyism. If we can prevent italics one child from getting hurt, we should deprive all italics children of slightly risky play.
No. Like, let your kids get dirty. Let your kids get hurt. It's okay. Don't, you know, just be a helicopter mom and prevent them from doing anything, because it's the risks that they take where they learn what their boundaries are. Jim and I, you know, for the most part, like, we probably let Connor and Charlotte do things that other parents would be like, "Oh my God, I can't believe you're letting them do that." But they're learning what their boundaries are. They're learning what their abilities are, and they're much better kids for it.
Do you ever fear it? I don't know if you remember me talking about the story. It's 5-6 years ago or so now. Mom ran back to her mom's house, left the kid in the car in the driveway, and some helpful neighbor called the police, and this woman was taken through the legal system mm-hmm. and, you know, cost her a reputation. She was a lawyer, I think. $30,000 and minutes
right.
on a mild day like this, and the kid was in the car, and some neighbor who thought they were doing a good thing was like, "Oh my God, this child has been neglected and left alone."
Right. I mean, a few weeks ago, like, I was stopping to get Chinese food for my parents and I had Connor and Charlotte in the car, and it would have been so easy just to run in to get the Chinese food, run out. It would have taken less than 2 minutes. It wasn't, you know, hot or cold. It was a mild day, but I ended up taking both toddlers out of their car seats, walking two toddlers inside the Chinese restaurant, you know, coming back out, just because I feared, like, what if there's some random person that sees, you know, two toddlers in a car and they, you know, report me, "Oh, clinical child psychologist from University of Finley leaves two kids in the car, neglectful, blah, blah, blah."
Look at where we've come from 10 years or so ago. And by the way, I don't know if you agree with this, but I've seen enough data that says the world is as safe as it's ever been. There's just more people telling you about the bad things.
Mm-hmm.
It's so safe. You can see graphs and they fall off cliffs in the last 70-100 years of where we've come from.
Right. I think the book talks about that too, about the idea of, like, people fear their kids being abducted, but, like, the number of kids who are abducted is significant because kids don't play outside anymore.
Well, there's that. Yeah, lack of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
But to go back to that, and kind of in that same line of thinking, 10, 15 years ago, a mom might have think, "I can't leave my kids in the car. Someone will snatch them." Now we're thinking, "Someone might tell on me."
Right, exactly.
I found that line,
okay.
And I think this is a good technique for people to use when they engage or when they feel like they're about to have somebody offend them. There's a principle in philosophy and rhetoric called the principle of charity, which says that one should interpret other people's statements in their best, most reasonable form, not in the worst or most offensive way possible. Not everybody on the internet wants to offend you and is trying to get under your skin.
Exactly.
Maybe you're just on different pages.
Mm-hmm. Not everyone's a troll.
No, they're not. They're not. I mean, usually they stand out pretty clearly.
Mm-hmm.
I ran through, I think, everything that I could throw at you. What are your other thoughts on this? You know, melding your mom... Mm-hmm. Melding you as a mom and what you do for a living together with all this coddling of the American mind.
I think for the most part it's just kind of, it's almost like we need to go back a little bit to parenting, how it was.
Instinctually?
Instinctually, kind of how our parents, you know, maybe parented us, and get out of this, you know, helicopter parent wanting to do everything, allowing your kids to struggle. I know it's super, super difficult as a parent, but you have to kind of catch yourself and just know that the struggle will help them down the road.
There's probably something like this in the book, but last night I was thinking, as I'm rewatching Game of Thrones, which I know you have a general familiarity with. There's, like, everyone is literally fighting to sit on the Iron Throne, and everyone keeps dying for it. And I was thinking about the one the lead female in the show, and she's as zealous as anyone to sit there. And I keep thinking, you've seen all these people die. Why do you want that headache? In fact, the first king to die in the show says, you know, he says, you'll be the sitting king while I'm sick, and you're going to hate it more than I hate it. I mean, it's a shitty job.
Right.
Same thing in the vein of this book. Why are you fighting so hard for, you know, the 4.0s? Do you need to be at Michigan? Do you need to have whatever the top grade is? I mean, let's step back and go, forget about your peers and even your parents telling you this. Is this what you want? Is this what ultimately leads to your happiness? Or are you just going to stress yourself until there's nothing left for you to succeed with?
Absolutely. Like I told, I actually had a conversation with one of my advisees recently. She has a 4.0 right now. And I told her that in the next year, she has to get a B or an A, B plus or an A minus in a class, because I don't want her to have a 4.0 anymore, especially because she's applying for clinical PhD programs where they start to question whether or not you have social skills.
And whether you study too much.
Mm-hmm, or whether or not you have, you know, life work or life school balance.
Yeah. Yeah. Question your goals.
Mm-hmm.
And are they yours? And try to project, will they ultimately make you happy? Or are you striving for this for someone else, for peer societal pressures? Because they might not be worth it.
Right. Because a lot of times, like, I hear, like, lots of people say, oh, I need to get into this extracurricular activity because of my college application. But, like, you don't need that many to get into college.
Right. And that, if there's one benefit that I know this is your livelihood, mm-hmm. but I am happy that kids have other opportunities these days to test out trades. Like, we've got a jewel here in, why can't I think of the place off of? Penta.
Okay.
So kids might not feel pressure like our generation was. Barry's got to go to college.
No, Jim and I talk about that all the time. It's like not everyone is meant to go to college. I think you said it on the show the other day. It's like you really only need to go to college like if you need certain degrees.
Doctor,
like,
lawyer, teacher.
Psychologist. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But if you want to go fly a plane, I mean, nothing. And it says it in the book, and I have it from going through this mental health journey and doing this for more than half my life, nothing can replace experience.
Mm-hmm.
Like my college education was moving to Detroit right after I turned 20 and doing part-time, working in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. And it saved Barry a lot of college education money.
Absolutely.
So we did it under 25 minutes.
Perfect.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Dr. Andrea Mata from the University of Philly Behavioral Sciences Department. Thanks for listening to the podcast.